A Prophet for Profit. Hi, this is Darko Stefanović from Walla Walla University School of Theology. I would like to welcome you to Good Word, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we are continuing our series of topics based on the book of Numbers. And to help me explore this challenging book, I have here two colleagues with me, Dr. Kyle Craig from the chemistry department here at Walla Walla University and Dr. Paul Dibdahl from the School of Theology. I'm also assisted by Susan Michael, who is helping us record this program. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
We have one more study on the topic of Balaam the prophet. And last week we talked about Balaam and his donkey and his trip to the land of Moab, and also one of the pronouncements that he made. In Numbers 24, we have another pronouncement made, and I would like one of you gentlemen to read this passage, just a few verses, Numbers 24, 15 through 17 and 19.
Then he uttered his oracle, the oracle of Balaam, son of Beor, the oracle of one who sees clearly, the oracle of one who hears the words of God, who has knowledge from the Most High, who sees a vision from the Almighty, who falls prostrate and whose eyes are opened. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. A ruler will come out of Jacob and destroy the survivors of the city.
All right. Here we have a description of Balaam's reception of revelation from God. He describes that process in poetry. We need to keep that in mind. And based on that, my first question is, how are the eyes and the ears of a prophet different from the eyes and the ears of the ordinary people? What is it that Balaam could receive from God through his ears and eyes that no ordinary being can?
Well, aren't their eyes and ears just really the same as ours, being really literal here, but that perhaps their mind is somehow opened in ways to see, I would say see true reality, not necessarily seeing things as they appear, but somehow God gives them the ability to see truth. Sometimes usually it's in the present situation. Sometimes, on some occasions, even to see into the future, what will come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see a vision. He says, I see a vision from the Almighty.
A vision, how would we explain that to today? That's some type of scene that opened his eyes to previously unseen vistas, or...
You know, that's a good question. I don't really know how to explain what a vision is. It's a vision. that's one way you could explain it. It also could be, as a child, I used to have stories read to me a lot, and I used to listen to stories a lot, and I would picture in my mind what that looked like. And so that's why... I don't like it when they take a book and make a movie out of it, because I've probably read the book and the movie in my head's better than the movie that you see. So maybe that's something that could happen too. I mean, I'm not saying I've had visions, but I'm just saying that, you know, God could speak to him and he could see in his mind, you know, what he wanted him to see.
Well, a dream at night, it's visual, but yet we're not seeing it with our eyes per se. Mm-hmm. It's something...
Mm-hmm. And very often those visions are symbolic, mm-hmm. full of symbols, and that brings us to basically the passage in brings us to verse 17. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star, here is a symbol. A star will come out of Jacob, a scepter will rise out of Israel, and then later on explained as a ruler. So, whose rise to power did Balaam see in a distant future? What would you say?
Well, I think some would suggest that it was David.
Mm-hmm.
King David.
Mm-hmm. Could we expand that a little and say, at this particular time, God's people did have Moses as their leader, but they did not have a king. And kingship is something that will come later on in the history of Israel. Mm-hmm. So can we expand that this star symbolizes the future rulers and kings, the actual kings among God's people?
And the next phrase, a scepter will rise out of, that seems to me to be a kingly kind of symbol as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Symbolizing here power, Israel's strength, isn't it? Political independence from the other nations and so on. Now, can we narrow it down? Is there a king par excellence? David would be a good candidate. Anybody more perfect than David from the Bible?
In the New King James that I have here, their star and scepter are both capitalized, and that usually refers to a member of the Godhead. And so we could say that this is Jesus Christ that he's referring to.
All right, so later on when we go into the book of Matthew chapter 1, we see Christ's lineage, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have the birth of Jesus Christ, son of David, and so on. I believe that it's good to balance these in our interpretation, that we talk about the future monarchy in Israel. Here, probably presented in a positive light, and that is that it guaranteed the independence of the nation, political independence, isn't it, and so on. King David, certainly, as very important king, on the other hand. And then I believe that we should not miss, the New Testament aspect to it, and that is the birth of Jesus Christ, the king, the true king of not only of the people of Israel, but all who by faith come to the knowledge and so on. I believe that it's good that there may be people who tend to side only, in one direction. I believe that it's good to open up and present these together.
Mm-hmm. I'm particularly intrigued that a prophet for profit would provide a statement about Jesus coming to save Israel. You know, it shows that God can use anyone at any time with any mindset to announce his intentions to the earth. And to me, that's probably the absolute best part of this whole story. Mm. And in some respects, last week we talked about, was the donkey the most surprising aspect of the story? No, this is, in my opinion.
So there is, an element of hope that sometimes God can use us, not because of us, but in spite of us.
Mm-hmm. And not just us, but other people, too. God can use other people. We can see their faults and their failures, but we should not conclude that God somehow can't work through them or even speak through them.
We wish the story ended here, but we go into Numbers 25, and there is a very sad incident. It says the Israelites were staying at Shittim. The men began to indulge in sexual immorality with Moabite women, and then there were sacrifices offered to foreign gods, and there was another punishment, another slaughtering of people. So, what type of sin does this text describe? What was going on here?
Well, I think the key phrase invited them to the sacrifices of their gods, and then it follows again in that same verse, they bowed down before these gods. That seems to me to be the key. The sexual immorality was likely in association with that worship. So it's we could sort of take our pick here. There are several bad things going on.
I'm reminded here, having recently read a book on Revelation, I'm reminded of the description of the harlot Babylon and so forth, and the kings of the earth committing harlotry with her and so on. And I'm reminded of that. And if Babylon, as we in the Seventh-day Adventist tradition believe, refers to an end time false religious system, if that can be paralleled back here, they were under God's religious system that he wanted them to be under as the children of Israel, and then they went after a false religious system, and so there was a punishment connected with that, just like we believe there will be a punishment at the end of days for those who have followed after Babylon.
And a curious mixture of sexual immorality and worship. An ancient practice that we see here. And then later on, like you have mentioned, in prophetic passages, we have even symbolic meanings behind it.
You see that in other things that are, not even related to the Bible. You start talking about any sort of ancient civilization, the Mayas and the Aztecs and so forth, come to mind. Some of the horrible things that they used to do often involved sexual immorality at some level, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just here in the Bible.
Yeah, and you know, this happened, and what really another element that is somewhat sad in the story is that both the Moabites and the Midianites, they were related to the Israelites. They were relatives, basically, of the Israelites. And we have here tragedy that happened and the severe punishment that Israelites suffered.
And the Moabites, too. Weren't they cursed? And permanently cursed?
Definitely.
And that's why the story of Ruth is so powerful.
Very important in the Bible. Well, one more question with regard to Balaam. Balaam, he wished, in his pronouncements, he says how he wished to die the death of the righteous. He wished he could die the death of God's people, of those who are faithful to him. How did he die? What do we know from the rest of the Bible?
Well, we find out later that Balaam is one who is sort of, I guess, leading in this whole process that we just read about, this apostasy.
Although it's not explicitly mentioned in the text, but most of the interpreters have suggested that.
And at the end of the book of Numbers, he dies for his role in
together
that.
Yeah, with
together
those
with those
who wanted to harm
right.
God's people. Right. So, what is Balaam's tragedy? Where was the problem? What lesson can we learn from Balaam's life, from his example? What would you say?
A lot of things. One thing that strikes me is that ultimately what he pronounces over Israel is correct. It's good. He gives a good prophetic word, a good blessing. But his life, his motivations are not what they should have been. God could work through him, but ultimately it's a tragic story of someone with great potential.
No moral strength, would
but
you
without
say?
Without moral strength, Kyle said it earlier. I think a prophet for profit, and that ended up costing him to follow along, kind of with the pun.
Mm-hmm. Could this serve as a warning to all of us?
Well, Jesus said you can't have two masters. Mm-hmm. You can't follow God and mammon, which we understand to be money.
Mm-hmm. And this is not the only example from the Bible of people who...
No, not the only example from the Bible, and we certainly have so many contemporary examples as well.
Mm-hmm.
People who want to turn spiritual things into a business for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to conclude, let's put it this way. It is dangerous to play games with the ultimate destiny. Gentlemen, I would like to thank both of you for being my guests today, Dr. Paul Dibdahl and Kyle Craig. I also would like to thank Susan Michael, our radio technician today, and invite all our listeners to join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Numbers. Thank you all for tuning in. For Good Word, I'm Zdravko Stefanović.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.